Yeah.
Yeah, I was listening to Max Kegmark and Sam Harris, and they were going on about AI and life and what qualifies as life. And Max Kegmark was saying, people think that like life is biological, but he wanted to widen the definition and say that it was a complex system that was able to retain its complexity as well as update itself.
I see.
So that fits all of biological life, but then would include if there was some non-biological life, so to speak, in that.
Right.
And then going into information processing, and that essentially came down to saying that essentially it didn't matter what the substrate was, there was patterns that could be computed via vacuum tubes or, you know, whatever, processors, this and that. You know, we essentially did the same thing, you know, with neurons and synapses. And
right.
How, I mean, that they laid it out pretty clearly. It was like, you know, what you are is similar to, like, just a pattern in, like, occurring on top of some substrate. And, you know, all of your atoms get changed out and all the water in your body molecules will get changed out. But whatever the you-ness that you feel is just a sort of repeating pattern that isn't actually objectified even in terms of like material objectivity. And I thought that seemed like pretty powerful and slightly disturbing.
But yeah, that's right. If it's disturbing, there's something to it.
Yeah. And of course I talked about waves as like, you know, the simplest pattern, and it always harkens back to that, you know, that or pithy statement everyone says, oh, you're like a wave in the ocean, blah, but like, nah, I mean like really.
Yeah.
There was just some substrate and whatever is, you know, patterns traveling through it. That's the thing you take yourself to be, which is just a disturbance in the field, not really even anything.
Right, right. Yeah, you know yourself through perturbation in the field.
Yeah, and that's not even to say anything about the field, so to speak. But
no, it can't. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you could say that's why contemplative stillness is threatening to most people, consciously or otherwise, because it's through the perturbation or interference patterns that animates one's sense of self or individuation. And were that to come to stillness, then that's an existential threat. So the restlessness of human mind, well, you know, I mean, it's like an addiction. Without, I mean, that's the original sin or the principal substance abuse is the addiction to variability, interference, which is then felt as, right, existential prowess. And nobody wants their existential prowess to be compromised. Otherwise, you're putting yourself in the hands of something over which you know you have no control. Like at the human level, you can pretend that you have control of or control over. So there's that existential safety net. But when this other thing comes rolling into town, pretend that you have any control over it. So confronted with the observation or the instinct that you have no control over that, you would wisely avoid it because it is an existential threat. Yeah. And when you look at it that way, you know, you could apply it to the various kinds of, you know, personalities that might show up to sip from this conversation, and how their defense mechanisms rear up to be able to protect themselves from the existential threat of their own dissolution. And so they revert to philosophy and strategy and questions and accusation and everything and anything that they possibly can to defend themselves from, you know, existential dissolution. And it's like, hey, that's cool. So you only, one only hangs out with some, you know, verve, strange sense of enjoyment. When there's a curious thirst for existential dissolution, and one is willing to take the risk to see what that's like.
It's a relief. I mean,
yes.
You know, instead of being a pit,
yes.
It just be a relief.
Yep. Yes. Again, that, you know, that all depends on your, you know, karmic or dharmic predilection for feeling things the way that you feel them. And over which neither you nor anyone else has any say or control or choice, really. And that also is kind of an existential threat. That's like, I have choice. I make decisions. I'm not the victim of anything. You're like, yeah, it's not a matter of being the victim of. It's a matter of, you know, checking in with what the fabric of reality is trying to show you and being willing to relinquish the defensive habit to insist on individuated agency. Yeah. For some relatively fewer people, you know, that texture, that instinct is suitable and nourishing. But to most people, it's not. So they, you know, either bury themselves in the imagination of their own life with satisfactory or unsatisfactory results coming and going as they do. Or they might get involved in, you know, one of a million forms of religiosity or spirituality. As entertainment and or accoutrements to the imagination of one's life, or as a vehicle of some kind to get from the imagination of here to the imagination of there.
Perhaps that's why some people get drawn into cults.
Well, sure, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, the Green Party, you know, Jim Jones.
Really,
yes, Mike.
What we, you know, hardcore cults.
Well,
you know, dangerous. Wait a minute, never mind.
You see what I mean? Yeah, no matter how you qualify it, conformist reality is the cult.
All of a sudden, stop.
You're like, wait a second.
All of it.
That's right. It is all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all of it.
That's like, this is, if you think about this or just contemplate a little bit about nothing, it's such a relief, a breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Who would want to just come in?
You must be able to pass through the membrane of threat to self, the tumult and the, you know, karmic congestion. You have to pass through that. Voluntarily or usually not, so that you can smell how sweet the air is on the other side of the turbulence. But the turbulence is, you know, threatening, understandably so. And so not that it's a justification for anything, but it appears that most people shy away from or defend themselves against existential turbulence so that they can pass through that membrane of hysteria, which is the cult of conformist reality. Yes, and wake the fuck up. You know, the various entertaining personalities that one encounters across the matrix of so-called, you know, teachers, instructors, mentors, provocateurs, you know, racketeers, authors, speakers, like those two gentlemen and, you know, thousands more, right? It starts to make it appear as if they're branch of physics, branch of philosophy, branch of spirituality, whether it's Dzogchen, Taoism, Vipassana, you know, yogic samadhis, are actually have something to say about the nature of reality. And in one respect, they do, because they're, you know, demonstrative forms of entertainment, you know, and experiential verification. But in the other respect, they don't have anything to say about reality because they're just perturbations in the field. They're just interference patterns that by virtue of appearing the way that they do can look like, you know, there's something there. There's nothing there. That's why it could be very difficult for someone that's, you know, dedicated, let's say, to the path of liberation, that has been studying one form of arcane Dzogchen, you know, ritualistic Dzogchen, which is unfortunate because Dzogchen should never become ritualized because it's, you know, its pointer is instantaneous. But all too often in Buddhist and other cultures, even paths of insight that are traditionally been taught and transmitted as spontaneous revelation become ritualized. And so then one becomes locked into the frames of reference that have been postulated by the ritualizing of the so-called teaching, and you dare not leave the familiarity and the comfort zone of that boundary field to become a zero. It's like the hard to break insistence on you, one, as an experiencer, remaining sufficiently whole to interpret what this is or what's occurring. And no, that has to go. And it's not easy, even if we're open or available to it. It's not necessarily easy to navigate from the imagination of here to this, you know, kind of grace of letting go. But even letting go is a too egotistically tainted. There's no letting go.
It's a dead end.
Well, yeah. Anything that is noticeable by the likes of you as a familiar pattern of the timbre and texture of experiencing is false. So it's present in that there's reverberatingly, scintillatingly, whatever there is that makes you feel and think the way that you think that you're thinking and feeling. So yeah, there's that, but it's not anything. and the assignment of, you know, meaning or durability or final understanding or samadhi or enlightenment or whatever, that's all imaginary.
Like a dog chasing its tail. You just can't quite.
Chasing its tail. Yeah. It's not until you bump into your own ass that you start to get it.
Exactly.
You know, so it's a fair and vital question. You know, what to do? Carl Renz is very, very, very funny. You know, go like, what to do? Because here you are, here one is, you know, resounding with sensuality and corporeality and sensation and imagination and language and projection, assertion, curiosity, right? And that's not even half of it. So here you are. There's a profound, right, vitality. And what does one do, if anything, with this? And very disconcerting, though, again, can have a sweet aroma once you pass through the turbulence. Well, do nothing with it. Do nothing with or about yourself. If that lands in a kind of a sweet spot, well, I'm not handing out medals, but I would say that's kind of rare. Most people that you know, if you know you're comfortable with them in a casual manner, and you ask them, well, what would it feel like if you did nothing with or about yourself? Right? They'd have no clue. That's the degree to which the emanation and rumination of the imagination of one's life has you by the short and curlies. One is not even conscious or aware of the degree to which the emanating and ruminating nature of consciousness has one trapped in false identification, knowledge. On the experiential side, of existential mystery. You're on the experiential side of existential mystery, and you don't realize that you're on the experiential side of existential mystery, or that there might be a subtle, non or transcendental experiential side of the mystery of experience. The, you know, yogini, the aspirant, somehow curiously becomes subtly aware of the trans existential nature of present experience. And is nourished by it. And, you metaphorically speaking, you could say that being nourished by the transcendental or trans-experiential nature is, you know, sipping from the fountain of realization. If that gesture excuse me, shows up in your life and instructs you by virtue of appointments with emptiness, then one would be wise to go that way, to relax and release into those appointments and be instructed by a trans-existential mystery. There's no authority there. Not religious and not social and not scientific and not surely not political. There's no authority. Even those kinds of personas that are boisterously, authority defiant, even those kinds of personalities, they suffer from their own inner authority. The lingering and tenacious inner authority drives humans crazy.
You almost have to.
Hi.
You have to start this early enough with children.
Yeah.
To breathe, take a breath, calm down. I mean,
well,
it's constant on the go, go, and then what? You get to be a teen.
You can't.
You know.
I mean, maybe some kids, learn yoga or meditation or certain rituals. I mean, if you can indoctrinate children into Christianity, into Judaism, into Islam, into, being suicide bombers at a young age, machete hackers. So you can indoctrinate children because they'll, like any of us, they'll follow the crowd. We'll follow the crowd to give me something to believe in, and a weapon to wield against someone else. Count me in, especially if there's a hot meal, at the end of the, right?
So,
yeah. But if you kind of sense for a sense, and as a parent, you've seen it better than me, at what point in, let's say, the lives of your own children would you have said, hey, you should be thinking about this? Everyone's on autopilot.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
It was actually the other way around. I was like, hey, Mom, you should be thinking about this.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, all right. So that's right. So then your adult child's like, hey, nudge, nudge. I mean, as infants, what are you going to do? As, preschoolers, as primary in primary school, junior high school, college, when do you ever have your children's attention long enough to say, hey, you should wake the fuck up? When they are, running at breakneck speed into conformist reality with a nonstop hormonal hunger. Right? There's just no time. Yeah.
Unless they're in the hole.
Well, okay. And that doesn't mean that, you can't have a handful of indigos that are kind of like angelic when they're, 12 or 8 and paint magical paintings and, read Deepak Chopra. I don't fucking know.
I should have really thought I'd flip my lid.
Yeah. I mean, if the culture at large if the insanity, if the existential cult of the culture at large were infused with a higher concentration of liberated understanding, it would be a different culture. And so the children would naturally be influenced by a different culture. I mean, this little preschool prior to that for some number of years was a Waldorf school, right? And so the Waldorf education is a deliberate, systematic, in some cases perhaps a little bit heavy-handed, attempt to configure children in a more, right, sustainable, higher vibrational manner. I don't know if it works. If you meet a handful of adult humans that went through a long education span of Waldorf influence, they're just as sick and crazed as everybody else. They just may even be a little more dissociative, you know, and they like pastels. It doesn't work. It doesn't fucking work. There's a bunch of people that went to Krishnamurti schools all over the world, you know, junior high school or whatever, and they got a very, in a sense, progressive, non-competitive education to the extent that they could be free from the influences of the cult of conformist reality. That didn't work either. Social engineering. Well, it's a natural one, and social engineering is like, good luck. Yeah. A fun little story from our acupuncturist who had a child not long ago, who's now, I guess, 9 months old. So for the first several months that the child was breastfeeding, the child remained just an easygoing ball of angelic presence, you know? A total samadhi. The story, as she said, was, I'll paraphrase, within minutes of eating solid food, bam, little boy. Noticing things, interfacing with things, insisting on things. The child woke up to the world. The world woke up in the child. And it was no longer an angelic breastfeeding presence. It was now a person. And an insatiable one. What's this? What's that? What's this? What's that? Right? So it's the lights of interactivity with this highly pixelated mirage got turned on like that within moments of having sweet potatoes. Curious. And we think we can socially engineer, right, something, or would like to think that we could create an enlightened society.
We're trying to. That's why men like boobs so much.
That's right. That they want to try to get back. Yeah. Please, I know we've only just met, but I really, really want to get back. Okay.
Oh, no, we're back to Game of Thrones. What was that, kids?
Oh, God. Yeah.
That was weird.
The veil. Yeah.
You know, our default, one of many default orientations, is time and space and society and children and engineering and influence and conditioning and what if and if only and what if and if only and what if and if only. And we run these tapes, you know, without pause, without hesitation, within our own minds.
Where's that when you need him? This would be the night for him.
Yeah. Fly them. It's challenging to use, right, the vernacular of conformist reality and steer it in a way that it emphasizes the transcendental nature of experiencing. Mm-hmm. by using $5 words like transcendental, as if that means anything. One's so-called actual experience, not contrived or interpreted or projected experience, is what exactly? And if you don't jump on it with a bunch of presumptions, gloriously, deliciously, you don't know what this is. Because the language systems don't do it, and the sciences and philosophies and spiritualities and religiosities, etc., of various ways of thinking or framing, they don't do it. You could study Sanskrit and become adept at its evocative, consonantal, tongue-tapping, pituitary, stimulating, right, chanting vibrations, and you will have delirium. I mean, a pleasant delirium. You will have pleasant delirium. Singing Hare Krishna, you know, for doing gate gate paragate parasam gate bodhi swaha for 20 minutes will change your brain. You will have delirium or relaxation or whatever you have.
Have you ever been down to the Zen Center in Philly?
I don't think so. Is it any good?
I mean, I don't know. I've been there a few times.
Facing a wall?
No, I'm just in a circle sitting. I just wanted to talk to the teacher there.
Did you have a chance to?
Yeah, I got a little 5-minute session.
Sweet. Yeah. How'd that go?
I guess the first like sort of awakened their taste I've had, and I just was like, so this happened, and it seems like that's pretty much it. And she was like, yeah, that's true, but then also she had referenced like Inger's Web and tried to sort of pull me back down. It was like things that are connected and like, you know, are sort of, I don't know, happening in whatever way, whatever limited fashion they are. It just reminded me of the, you know, Gate.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Dig into that one.
Sure. Yeah, that would make sense.
There was a nice old lady there who ran the show. I forget what her name was or what her credentials were, but...
Nothing like a nice old lady. With no effort, you know, the mirage of continuity makes it seem as if something happened to you before now. And that's you know, useful and thrilling and has its own kind of, you know, delirium, pleasant or unpleasant. And if there is something that you could call consciousness, and who knows, one of its, you know, fond games is to attempt to convince itself that it was here a moment ago. And that your present experience is actually a continuity of a prior. But it's not. And that's just strange. Intimidating or thrilling, it's up to you. You can conjure, right, so-called memories, whether olfactory or sensory or experiential or visual or any. You can conjure memory like it's actually your own, as if it's your memory. You pull, one pulls impersonal etheric vibration out of the no space and claims it as my memory. And then when you're like, of course I existed prior to now. I remember shit. No, it was just etheric potentiates that are, you know, falling out of solution. And then they're claimed as my memory. And so it's like, for sure, I existed prior to now. I can prove that a million ways from Sunday. But you can't really. You can't really, really, really prove that you were here a moment ago. Or that something actually occurred to you before whatever this is. And, interestingly enough, whether what I'm suggesting is true or untrue, and it needn't be either, how does it make you, right? How does it land in you? That's the fun part. Because nothing's true or untrue. No one can say, hey, this is true, this is untrue. This is too wiggly and forceful in its demonstrative nature that for sure shit's true. For sure shit's untrue. But not really. You can't really prove or refute what might be true or what might be untrue. You just have this curious vibrational irrefutability that is, at least in what we call humans, interpreted in the ways that it appears to be interpreted. Meaning is assigned. And that's the same kind of, you know, magical power that's going on when a sense of oneself having been legitimately existent prior to now occurs. It only occurs as a, you know, as a hypnotic suggestion. As does everything occur as a so-called hypnotic suggestion.
It occurs as a hypnotic suggestion when you identify or pull apart or analyze it.
When you take it to mean something.
Yeah.
Even if not so much that. Even if it's light. If you take it to mean something, the implication is
hypnotic.
Yeah, that it's hypnotic.
Otherwise,
that's right.
I think it is. So I don't know if it's context or content or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm always tripped up by those words.
Me too.
So let's say there is no context.
Mm-hmm.
So then it can be,
mm-hmm.
but there's no context.
Yeah. See, language insists on, right, a language is bipolar, mm-hmm. like many of us are. Language works by presuming or playfully asserting a thing, and only has, you know, some kind of value if we can contrast what it's asserting to what its apparent opposite might be. And this is true for awareness and consciousness and transcendental and implication, and we can't escape it, right? Language just works that way. Even if you're talking in tongues and no one gets what you're saying and you're flipping about on the floor after you've been bitten by a python, you know, at a mega church down somewhere, that still is happening, even though no one understands what you're saying. And so it's like, I really, really want to agree with everybody. But how can I? And it's not that I'm disagreeable. And I'm not talking just for myself, for any of us.
Really?
Oh, I can play. I can pretend to be disagreeable.
Win an Oscar.
But that's just, yeah, that's just for, you know, that's for just shits and giggles.
So if nothing happened before, how did I get this broken arm?
I don't know.
It just occurred. Within my imagination, a car accident.
I don't know.
The broken arm doesn't exist?
Really?
She has the right.
Well, look at it this way, like the impulse that appeared as a thought and then a spoken gesture of how did I get this broken arm came from where exactly? You don't know.
The neurons in my brain. My brain is wired.
That's a very clever explanation for saying I don't know.
Take a look at the brain. Slice it up. It's ongoing. It goes on and on all the time.
All right. So if for now, if you feel confident that that is the reason why a thought occurred as a reminiscence of a broken arm, then okay, blame it on the bossa nova. Blame it on your neurons.
Well, you just have to back it up. Like, all right, so why did your brain ever form? Okay. Why did the first human ever form? Why did the first cell? Why is there anything here?
Back it up.
And then it's like, all right.
Yeah.
Shit.
Someone cracked open the doors to the warehouse. There's a fuckload of 50-inch TVs in there. Back it up. Fill the truck. See? At some, not that it's a point, but at some curious fork in the road, cul-de-sac, milestone, or non-existent place, one has to place confidence in something being somehow accountable or responsible for something else. And there is no something, nor is there something else. Not possible, though it certainly appears to many that it is, that you can say why, what, where, how, when, who, and what the causal factors were. For something as simple as, well, how did I get this broken arm then? Whatever's occurring in you right now, physically, somatically, emotionally, psychiatrically, psychically, rainbow bodily, is just like, we don't know what the fuck it is. And it's felt in the way that it's felt. Again, we don't know how that occurs. And there may be sentiment associated with something, sensation, ideation, right? Justification, causality. But it's just streaming strangeness. If we presume to know or derive causality from transcendentally appearing mystery, well, okay, then we're opinionated. We become opinionated. I'm not saying that's good, bad, or indifferent, but I could say that the cult of conformist reality is comprised of those opinions. Now, whether that's a good, bad, or indifferent thing, I won't place value judgment on it, at least for this moment. In a moment or two, I'd be happy to.
You don't need help.
No, not when it comes to that. A couple other things, I'm sure.
Is there a difference between transcendental and transcendent?
Yeah. I mean, dictionarily speaking, sure.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I'm thinking transcendental is sort of a a way of thinking. It's sort of an opinion or a philosophy about things. You know?
Well,
is it?
Well, sure. I mean, if we suggest that present experience is transcendental,
what does that mean?
What does it mean?
But if you were to say it's transcendent, I'd be down with that. But I don't know what you mean by transcendental.
Okay, I don't either.
Okay.
I mean, just I like the way it rings.
Alrighty, then.
I mean, we could look it up. You know, like, oh, transcendental implies that, and transcendent.
Yeah. Might
imply the same thing or nuanced a little differently, but even the words that you're going to find to describe the implication of transcendental as contrasted with transcendent themselves are going to be transcendentally appearing and have their own implications. So right? You can't really turn to the dictionary because they're all, dictionaries are Bibles. They are. The dictionary is actually a philosophy text.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a big self-loquacious, self-pointing, cyclical philosophy text. Look up the word truth and then look up every word that is associated with truth. Or another fun one is, you know, the absolute, or look up any kind of fun word that has a, you know, a big spiritual implication, and you'll see that the dictionary is just a philosophy tome, because it just keeps referring back to itself, back and forth to itself, back and forth to itself, back and forth to itself, and it leaves you like David Chalmers is left with the big question, right? The impossible question, which is, what the fuck is consciousness? And whether, hearkening back to our earlier, the earlier conversation between the two titans of, you know, philosophy, we'd like to expand the so-called definition of consciousness or life to include, right, non-biologic systems that are capable of parsing data, right, information, in a non-looping manner. Yeah, so that there's the implication of non-looping means that there's novelty, right? Novelty has come into the system. Yeah, so an AI device, whether it's in a super cooled environment, or whether it's been given appendages and the chance to move about and or communicate, if novelty exists in that system, then you could, for fun, expand the definition of life or alive to include that system. Yeah. Otherwise, if it's iterative, right, and never leaves the boundary field of its own programmable loops, well, it's robotic, right? It doesn't have novelty. Yeah. And humans, as we can, you know, tell.
Still would be pretty novel in the first one.
Oh.
Just to use the
plan. Well, sure. Yeah. Right. Right.
But yeah, they did talk about, you know, if it would be conscious or not. And
yes.
How basically all meaning, so to speak, would evaporate from the universe if there was no conscious entities. It would be a void, you know.
No way to say. I mean, it's a fun question, but, you know, jury's out. That's like a, let's think about that one.
What is it?
Yeah. Right. I mean, you know, humans are, we're fascinating to each other. Novelty could be a synonym with being, you know, alive, conscious, animate, unpredictable, dangerous, right? Loving, ecstatic. Yeah. You know, so we're like, ah, God, I'm a fucking novel system, ah. Right? So we're either fond of each other or not fond of each other, as one novelty system interfaces with another novelty system that appears to be, right, independently existent. And yet the whole, right, ball of phenomenality or creation is, let's say, meta-novel, and then expresses itself, right, at iterations or phase-shifting novelty at any level of cycling that you can perceive. A photon is a level of cycling. An electron is a level of cycling. A molecule is a certain kind of cycling. Solid matter composed of da-da-da-da-da-da-das is cycling. Right? A loving embrace is a form of cycling, right? So no matter where perception is operating, whether religious, spiritual, scientific, political, you name it, what we're playing around with are, right, multiple undulating levels of, call it, you know, cyclic vibration, that are occurring in a mad spectrum that has no limitation. All at once. I mean, beautifully, right? Blissfully. Transcendently occurring. All at once. All at once. Holy shit. And we could say the capacity of novelty or the capacity of intelligence, thankfully, wondrously, capable of surfing the entire bandwidth of experiencing, of phenomenality, of vibration, all at once. And if if that intelligence is non-parsing, meaning non-specific, right, non-accusatory, non-acquisitive, holy shit, it gets a sense of how outrageous it is. And that wonder, that revelatory, oh my God, is non-specific. Because it's not plucking anything out of the entire, right?
And it continues.
Yes.
pouring, a continual pouring, and it never repeats.
Novelty. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
More like a flood.
Oh, total flood.
And it never repeats.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. A total flood that's non-repeating. Mm-hmm. Streaming novelty without particularizing it.
There's no resistance, which defining
yes.
is resistance.
Yes.
And fasting yeah. and whatever.
Uh-huh. Which occur quite, right, mm-hmm. naturally. Mm-hmm. Resistance occurs without resistance.
I'll get back to you. I don't know.
Okay. That resistance occurs in terms of parsing, particularization, knowledge, mm-hmm. right, causality, implication, yes. that occurs without resistance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you are therefore, if there's a therefore, and there's not, thankfully, because it's just a flood of I don't know. It's a big flood of I don't know. Without resistance. Not that anyone is responsible or accountable or has any control or volume control over it. But if the attitude of what we might refer to as resistance goes way down, and now there's no resistance, capacitance, to present experience, you're done. You're in the flood zone. And though there might be lifeboats passing by, you're not asking to be saved. Biologically, it would be wise, you know, to get out of the attic onto the roof and then flag down someone in a boat. But from this point of view, just let the water rise.
My mind is latching on to the picture.
Uh huh.
So I don't know where this is going to go, but
that makes three of us.
if we say that there was a flood, and then you pull out this particular drop and you're focusing on that.
Yeah.
It doesn't change anything, mm-hmm. but somehow you're adding content. You're saying there's this.
Uh-huh.
Right? So then you have it feels different.
Yes. like, well, right, streaming or flooding novelty feels different from so-called moment to moment. And you can't actually find a boundary condition between how it feels now and 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 how it feels now. You can't. There's no stop start. Though, you know, someone can refer to this as like I don't really quite get it myself, but you know, I've heard metaphors used that refer to this as like snap, 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 snap. You know, as if a camera shutters, right? Each moment is like.
Oh yeah, I've heard that. Yeah, something science said like reality occurs at like 20 milliseconds of cycle or something.
Okay, yeah. So that's imposing a certain quality of measure or shutter speed to experiencing, which I don't think is all that antithetical to it being.
What does it matter if there's little pauses in between or not?
Yeah, right. And pauses mean what exactly? You know, is the pause like?
I guess technically.
Reality on, reality off, or.
You don't even notice a pause.
No.
Like, technically, no. You just like skip right to the next part where you're like, yeah. Being streamed at.
The pause would be included in the whole.
It would have to be, yeah.
So I don't think you could necessarily, it wouldn't be a pause, which is what we run into constantly.
Well,
it is and it isn't. Both not, it's both, right?
To go back to computation and artificial intelligence, they describe it as we will up computational speed, what it will do for the AI itself is it's not going to make it process things faster. It will essentially slow time down for them.
Right.
Like it's not like you can't like make like they said like they couldn't like make like it's like the speed of reality changes essentially coming at you and then like a super fast AI like wouldn't be able to interact with humans because
different time zone.
You know, millennia would pass in an afternoon for them, and it's like,
yeah.
And what do you do at that point?
Wow, that's fun. Yeah, that'd be fun for two novel systems, what we are familiar with as human time frame, and a super computational AI appearing to occupy the same space. But even that space would be felt one way by the human, and then presumably another way by that quality of novel intelligence that we would call AI. And who knows if there would even be, right, a computational or a conversational interface. Yeah, and that's when the AI has become self, in a sense, self-conscious, self-novel, and is no longer dependent upon human, right, tinkering to set the tone of its time zone. Yeah, now it's woken up, it's independent. Yeah.
And just that one other, like, you know, weird
factoid
to it.
Yeah.
As I said, too, is that, like, it would almost make the internet obsolete because, like, two AI couldn't communicate with each other across the globe because even that amount of time it would take
would be
like, oh, let's just wait 100 years to see what this AI said. So you'd have to, like, make them in the same room so they could link up and, like, time wouldn't be, like, enough of a problem.
Huh.
So it would still be, like, useful to have two machines interact.
Oh.
Because, like, it, like, really changes the way, the speed at which reality is sensed, so to speak.
Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. The oscillation of sensing reality is not fixed.
Yeah, it goes up so high that it's, like, difficult to interact with other sensors.
So oh, that's fun. Well, that also could be like an added reason why it's hard for a so-called sentient or novel civilization to find a so-called extraterrestrial intelligence, because they, if there are they, depending on what weird composite of space-time they are dwelling as,
yeah,
might make it impossible for us to have any kind of conversation loop. We could literally be surrounded by, right, intelligences that are far above, below, or to the left or right of what we call human, but there's no capacity for conversational, right, connectivity.
Yeah, I mean, they could be on like a year or 100 trillion, you know, we're like, oh, the universe is 13 billion years old.
And yeah, and they're like,
depends how you measure
shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like in Star Trek, though everyone looked a little strange, they all, for the sake of doing a show, spoke English. That doesn't tell you something. And those, all of the aliens that had peculiar physicalities from peculiar worlds were occupying the same, right, apparent space-time,
yeah,
right,
yeah,
conversational zone, so that they could maybe have intercourse and see what comes out of that, or fight with each other, or build space stations and go on grandiose adventures.
That covers the whole show.
That pretty much covers it. Yeah.
Learn from the other.
Yeah.
But I think maybe have a quantum computer.
No, I mean like super intelligent computer, like an AI.
But a quantum computer will be able to compute fast enough for an AI like you're describing.
Yeah. But are you able to program like a self-contained, non-iterative replicating intelligence? Probably, but we're just not there.
We're not there yet.
That's what I'm saying.
Computer is,
if you give like an AI a quantum brain, it won't really be able to interact with us like meaningfully, you know?
Yeah.
I'm 100,000 years old. Like, I just met you today. Like,
I was thinking about the two AIs. They could...
Well, if they were in the same room again.
But if they had a quantum computer, they could communicate through...
That's what I'm saying, though, is that even... Well, this brings a whole other point that's sort of irrelevant to it, but there's actually quantum degradation, so even like regular quantum computing won't work outside of like a small 20-mile like range as the technology is now, because there's atomic breakdown, there's too much. Once the experiment gets too long, there's too much interference, so like the computational pattern, like there's just too much interference from the background, so it's the pattern just sort of disappears.
Maybe that's like a certain fail-safe.
That's different, but that's not like, you know, like quantum computers don't make like, it's not like, you know, a new, like, you know, cable internet. So it doesn't make, like, the communication between the two, like, machines faster.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Quantum
computing makes the computer faster. It's not like the internet becomes faster.
No, not the internet.
That's what I'm saying. That's the problem.
It's totally different. It would be quantum.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The problem isn't the computational speed. The problem is, like, you know, to send, like, a, you know, just a packet of data across from here to China takes, like, 1,000 milliseconds. And for that,
it's too slow.
Like they theorize that they would experience time at like the, you know, a rate of dilation which is just so.
And it,
like,
would be faster than a quantum computer.
They describe it like if you knock like a coffee cup off the table and it's like, you know, all this time has passed before the coffee cup hits the ground. So it's
okay.
So much fun.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The quantum computers make it even worse, because the computer themselves just starts going faster, and then it's just like leaving, you know, Cat 5, you know, cables in the dust. And it's like,
well, yeah, it's a kind of an, in that respect, it's kind of an isolated consciousness.
Yeah, it would be, I guess if you're a million years old, then you have to wait like, you know, 100,000 years for a message, like maybe, you know.
Yeah.
And that would suck, but like.
But who knows? Yeah. Meanwhile, if it's not reduced to the sensuality of so-called biological system, it's just fun to.
Yeah. If you didn't have
imagine a different timestamp than the one that we are conditioned to have.
If you didn't have like physical needs constantly biting at you.
Yeah. Right.
You didn't feel like your security was always at risk. You know,
that's the promise of realization, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe the computers just come out like pre-enlightened. You're good to go.
Yeah, they're pre-enlightened. Yeah, they're good. Yeah, hey, thanks. I'm Bob. I'm good. Hi, Bob. Hi. Yeah, I'm good. Can I get you anything? No.
Yeah.
No, I'm good. I'm good. Which is, you know, if you walk up to Ramana Maharshi, you'd have the same conversation. Hi, I'm Ramana. Oh, hi, Ramana. You need anything? No, I'm not good. Right?
Yeah.
And so the human so-called craving for realization as the end of suffering or whatever is like, it's the same metaphor.
Yeah, and to add another like scientific layer to that, I think this has been discussed here, but there's people with this specific condition where they're like, not like psychopathically devoid of emotions, but their cognition is not affected by emotion.
I see.
And they basically are incapable of making decisions because they're always perfectly looking, like weighing every logical position.
Like Jordan Peterson.
Yeah. Well, they're not like, there isn't this emotional drive to like do this.
Yeah.
You know, right. So you don't have like that light, well, I guess maybe not light, that
there's nothing,
moderate addiction.
There's nothing to sway.
You know, yeah. So
there's no swaying.
So they wouldn't do anything. So maybe AI would. You'd have to program some selfness into them.
They
wouldn't do anything.
Yeah. Well, that's like if everyone got enlightened, they would just all gravitate toward the airport to see if there was any food left. You know, well, what would you like to do, honey? Well, why don't we head to the airport? You know, maybe we can get a sandwich.
So the AI's first order of business would be removing the emotional software and go back to doing nothing. Why did you program that into it? Where did that
Yeah, right. Okay, I'm good. We're good. Yeah. Yeah. I'm Ramana. I'm good. Can I get you anything? No. No, we're good.
Data and his brother.
Yeah.
Data was really on Star Trek.
Yeah, I don't remember his brother, but yeah.
Didn't have like the emotions.
Yeah.
But his brother did.
Oh, he had a crazy brother full of emotion?
Yeah.
Oh, yikes.
He's just as smart and strong and all that.
Oh, boy. Someone put a chip in that guy. Someone put a chip. Well, it's a fun. Conundrum. You know, we don't. Perhaps we would like not to suffer, or there are aspects to the comic book caricature of self-realization that we're attracted to. Somehow. And then, you know, in the back of our minds, we might wonder, well, at what cost? Right? Like, the Borg doesn't really seem to be all that bad once you get over the initial shock of it. Right? Right? Resistance is futile. We are the Borg. Resistance is futile. You're like, well, you're not taking me. And then you get assimilated, you know, because someone sticks a Borg pipe up your ass. And before you know it, now you're one, you know, you're the one Borg mind. And you've got equipment all showing up on your what used to be your so-called, you know, body, but you're not, you know, you might not be suffering. Is that the realization that, you know, see, most humans want a realization that can be enjoyed, that where the delightful novel nature of self-determinism and choice and et cetera can be enjoyed in a sanguine, right, imperturbable condition, right? Yes. And you're
never
like,
to be disturbed again.
And you really, and that's fun because you want to, you know, you wonder whether that's what one really wants. Whatever your imagination of realization might be, and whether you can articulate it or not, there's something going on there, right? There's some kind of strange patterning or vector going on there. And we're not really sure what we've signed up for. If you could sign up, right? What would you sign up for? When you go to the Star Group, you think you're signing up for a thing. When you go to Pebble Hill, you think you're signing up for a thing. If you come to this fucking clown show, you think you might think you're signing up for a thing. What are we signing up for? And what's the takeaway? What's the deliverable? Right? Is it what is it? What's the deliverable that I should discover myself as without perturbation, right? Without what? Emotion? You know, novel but unmoving? You know, don't I want to still interact with the world but have it be in a more, call it gracious, manner? I don't know. And it's not that it stays still either, right? You know, the way that you think and feel about things as, let's say, new information comes into your system are going to naturally change. So thankfully, we're not as myopically one-pointed as the yoga teachers say we should be. Don't be one-pointed. Be, you know, be multivalent. Why be one-pointed? Why presume that you are of a certain condition and that you'd be better off, perhaps, in some other? You're not actually in a condition at all. Or that's right. Yeah, sure. And those two are oddly the same.
There we go.
Yeah, that's like, how could there be no condition at all, but there could be all these conditions at the same time? I don't know. Oh, Jesus, where does it, like, where does it leave me? Where does it leave one? What? I thought I wanted to become something.
Something.
But I don't know about that anymore. And I'm not really sure what to do now.
Oh, it turned out like Stephen
Hawking. Oh, yeah. Can I get a Reese's cup, please?
Yeah, they offered him like an improved robot voice.
What'd he say?
He's like, no, this is mine.
This is mine?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's cool. Come on. Guy's cool.
I don't know how he's lived so long. Incredible, right? You think that, like, sitting in that chair has got to be really bad for you, but he just, his mind just won't give up, I guess, and his body's just along for the ride.
Yeah, his mitochondria is willing to consent to, you know, a force of mind that is like, yeah, they're like, you're the most interesting guy in the room. We'll just, you know, we'll keep you alive.
Speaking back to enlightenment, right?
Yes.
Earlier. Yeah, I was like, when I almost,
back to that, Chip.
Yeah, when I almost get into a car accident, you know, someone pulls out, just like all the meanness stops, and just is like, and like something else just takes over, just for like, you know, a half second or whatever.
Yeah, right.
Well, I've heard the explanation on that one.
What's that?
Survival instinct is at a different center of it.
Your DNA.
You're not actually thinking when that happens. There's no thinking.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, the DMN shuts off and there's just some other thing going on and the regular old miserable you is just nowhere to be
found
for a moment. Only to make sure that the body doesn't get obliterated by an 18-wheeler.
That's for really himself.
Thinking isn't fast enough in this situation. Especially, let me tell you. Not here.
Yes, if that zone of, you know, functionality or interactivity is possible, and it's clear that I'm not doing it, that tells you something. That might also be the case while we're insisting that I'm doing this. The sense of I'm doing this, you know, it's an afterthought. It's a remnant of that otherwise impossible and absolutely impersonal impulse, right? Vibratory, functioning, novel impulse going on. That's why, you know, you can say that thought or interpretation is always late. Though it's occurring in real time, what it is referring to is imagined. Yeah, because in that case, the substrate is you got nothing. Yeah. Though in one respect, then maybe this liberation puzzle is in an involuntary appreciation of the substrate that that's not operating through language intervention, assertion, grasping, right? Explanation, cause, it's not causal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Chilling in your own a causal
nature. Comforting to know, because now on your deathbed, you
oh, yeah.
can just be having a good time, just but you
yeah.
know, not have to do shit.
Yeah.
You know?
And or well, or while living.
Right, yeah. right. But I
so-called.
I'm not concerned with the
Yeah. You're not so much concerned about now, you're just more interested about what's gonna happen when you're dying.
I don't know. I think now it's not an issue.
All right.
Because I can move and
yeah.
do stuff.
That's right. I can take food from the fridge. I'm okay.
Yeah.
yeah. But when I can't, it'd be nice to know I'm pretty chill.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm still going to be good.
Yeah, that's right. I'm still going to be good. The, you know, whatever appreciation, realization, understanding, who knows, as one's acausal substrate nature becomes more conversational with itself. Well, then, I don't know, shit is shifting. Because now awareness, whatever it might be, instead of being hoodwinked by assertion, proclamation, and imagination, is now curiously fond of its own acausal nature and learns how to chill, rest, reside, right? In that view, as that, which is this. Resting as that, which is this. And the reflex of, you know, personification is like, fuck it. where prior to that getting, you know, just say more conversational, we have a lot of perhaps quarrel or discomfort with, right, the reflex of personification. And, you know, Jeannie's coming to town next month or whatever and emailing with her assistant. And you see, there's a portal where working with personification and the symptoms of personification is used as a thread or a handle to awaken to non or acausal, one's acausal nature. And she must enjoy doing that because you have to wade through the histrionics of everyone's persona to try to slip in there, you know, a chip or a virus of a causal revelation. I don't have what it takes to do that. I just don't have what it takes to do that. I don't have what it takes. Fuck. So I, you know, what occurs is a fondness of my own. Is, you know, try to play around with the present demonstration of one's acausal nature and see if there can be some kind of hookup for that to, like, wow, shit. Without having to go through the histrionics of navigating someone's personification.
You run a spiritual charity house for the aversives.
Yeah, it's a spiritual charity house for the aversives. Because I'm an aversive, so what choice do I have? Yeah, it is. It's a charity house for aversives.
Do a great service to us misfits.
Because we're in trouble. I mean, out in the world, you know, hating everybody and everything is like, oh, it's fucking rough. So it's good to have a halfway house to go to. A recovery meeting.
I love everybody.
Yeah. This is a recovery meeting for aversives. Yeah. Hi, my name is Jeff, and I'm aversive. Hi, Jeff. Mm-hmm. We, you know, everyone kind of understands each other.
So Emily will fit in well.
Yeah, well, she does. When she pulls up a chair, she fits in well. Yeah, I hate everyone and everything. Pull up a chair. Yeah, we get it. We're so aversive, we don't even do the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meeting. We don't do the Pledge of Allegiance. We don't do the Lord's Prayer. Fuck you. Fuck this. Fuck me. I'm aversive. Candle check?
No, I want to move it around.
You're an artist. You can't help yourself.
I know I can't. I'm aversive to these candles.
Mm-hmm. You know, someone like Adam Chaxfield would just find the courage to talk a little bit. Then he might be able to set the tone for, you know, the present appreciation of one's acausal nature. But instead of, you know, emphasizing that or soliciting or eliciting conversation and thoughtfulness of that style, it becomes another, right, journey through the hell of personification. You're like, why do that?
Because he's having a good time. Fuck the rest of them.
Maybe.
You know,
there's some kind of sick,
sitting and meditating.
Sick fucking thing going on there.
Pay me while I sit here.
Yeah.
Oh, no. This seems like hard work.
That does seem like hard work.
How much did they have to pay for that retreat?
It was pretty cheap. I think it was $350 or something for a 4-day thing. Well, it was very reasonable. Yeah.
Well, I'm not above scamming people. I don't think that was good.
Yeah, you just sit there with your hands open. And you're like,
some people.
Yeah, and you're feeling how about what?
No.
And then, yeah.
I don't go either. Yeah. But, you come to mine when I'm ready. Mine will be different.
If you leave humans, excuse me, you leave humans to their own devices, you're just going to have a shitbox of personification. Yeah, everyone thinks that, you know, they got a broken arm in a car accident.
Gerbil will bite you.
Yeah, right. Beware the voracious gerbil.
Bring the gerbil next week.
He's in his car. So when he least expects it. Okay, he's dropped. Oh, sorry.
You should have seen the magical fire at Jeff's house the other night. You were there for that, right?
I can say probably as long as most, but yeah.
The colored fire.
I did see that, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Beth.
Blood
Beth,
of gerbil.
Beth, she snuck in the chemical package.
Really, you had the chemicals you threw into the fire to get the colors?
Yeah, they make some really wild colors. It's nice.
Wow. Just say, I ran out of firewood. Can you bring some kindling? How hard that would have been. Ran off. Oh, God.
Well, you can burn, like, I don't know, rosemary or sage or something off into the fire.
Who are you talking about?
Remember when they had that drum circle up in Bethlehem? They put the flyer out.
Yeah.
Bring food and an offering to the fire.
Okay.
My mother's like, oh, I'll bring the gerbil. I'm like, this isn't a Satan sacrifice to animals. What the hell?
Oh, that would have been so much fun to watch.
You can tell how much she wants to get rid of the gerbil.
What does offering for the fire mean exactly?
Dan's having a bonfire tomorrow night. Bring him along.
There you go.
I want to have a pain list.
You didn't say you roast them alive, all right? We're not animals. Come on now.
Okay. I'll bring them. Take them out.
Give them to her. She wants another animal, another orphan animal. She takes good care of them, never fantasizes about roasting them. It's not as bad as this lady in class. They were discussing like speech class, and there were two people up there, an Asian woman and this white guy, and the word channel was split between like this border, right? And so it said like message up top, then channel, then something else like inference or something. And the teacher said, all right, so we're going to talk about these two people. Let's give them names. And the one lady's like, they already have names, Chan and Nell. Oh. I thought it was just like, she was dying laughing. But I thought it was like Nelson. And someone else said Chan. I thought that was a little too on the head, so I didn't speak up. But she was mortified.
One's vitality, or the, you know, the tonality of experiencing, can rest without particularizing. The vibratory undulation of experiencing itself takes up residence as itself. And then the nuisance of two resolves.
Eighteen-wheeler coming right at you.
And it's hard to say whether you'd move out of the way.
People would be hearing screams. Even if it's not it.
You know, self-absorption can have two different, maybe more than two, implications. Right. In one vernacular, self-absorption, someone could be accused of self-absorption as a narcissistic egomaniac that has no sensitivity or consideration for the novelty of others. Right. Self. Yeah. And the other implication or vernacular of self-absorption is, you know, non-duality.
I think so. In those cases, the self refers to self. One self refers to the action figure, and one self refers to the totality.
Yes. Yeah. And that latter quality of self-absorption, non-particularization, resting in the, right, the evocative vibration of experiencing as streaming novelty without assertion, without narrative. you know, that may or may not be, you know, pleasing or what one is after, as concerns their hoped for destination of whatever self-realization might be for them.
Guarantee it's going to be different. We know that. They'll never get what they were meant.
No. Because the anticipation of, let's say, realization as an experiential go-to or an experiential destination, it can't ever be satisfied.
All right, what if we take... And this will still be in the realm of experience, but apparently people say after the whatever, we'll just use this word, the change in context affects the experience. So what if you had that, if I combine all the different whatever way things I had into one experience where it's like clouds are arising and just like sort of exploding, right?
Yeah.
And then there's just like radical inclusion.
Yeah.
And then you're like merged because there's an 18-wheeler coming at you, so there's no like congealed self sort of there and you're just like acting.
Yeah.
Like, you know. The experience is just happening like that. How would that be for a picture of?
That's cool.
You know what I'm saying? You think that's like similar to Peter Brown's experience?
You could say yes without lying, and you could say yes and be lying.
All right. Well, that's the best non-answer ever. All right.
Yeah.
I was like, man, Peter Brown really likes to eat apples. I'm like, I like to eat apples too. We sort of experience the same thing when we're biting into a nice red delicious.
I can feel it. Yeah, it's like, oh my God. That was the best apple I had today.
So is it closer to that or closer to, you know, I am allergic to apples and get hives and Peter Brown just loves apples? Which is it closer to?
Pick one.
I must be right if she's not saying it.
Yeah.
We got it. Bam, nailed it. That's enlightened. That's the experience of the enlightened person. Who knows what enlightenment actually is? I don't know. It doesn't happen in experience of time, whatever. It's not even that much fun. But there's whatever.
Now you're getting somewhere.
There's some outgassing afterwards that looks like that, you know, and you walk around to the airport and try to get a sandwich.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Did somebody say sandwich?
His eyes would have lit up there.
Really? Airport? Sandwich? Oh. Yeah, let's go.
That's how you test your Google. Walk in, let's go to the airport, get a sandwich. Huh?
Yeah.
Enlightened. All right.
Yeah, really. Here. That's a simple litmus test. Master, airport, sandwich? Uh-huh. You're my teacher. Yeah, really. I was like, damn it. AI. Must be AI.
He must be really enlightened, man. Doesn't even need a sandwich.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's a
master,
up.
Sandwich? I'm good.
Yeah. I'm not worthy.
He or she's not going to tell you. They just came from the airport.
Yeah, that's a secret.
That was a secret. No, yeah.
Had a sandwich.
My master was really sanguine. No, it just came from the airport. fuck it. I mean, experiencing is like nitrous. It's like, it's just a giddy fest. Radical inclusivity, is strange, right? It could be voluminous in terms of content, context, and volume, and right, absurdly without any of those. And it's the same radical inclusivity. you know, like color. It's like food. You know, it's not quite the same as eating a delicious apple, but in the vibratory exchange. You know, it's you. One is feeding on novelty. Novelty feeding on novelty. Yeah.
Maybe there is a sensation of when you look at it that it that you are not separate. So I don't know where I was going. I forget.
Now. Yeah. Well, the you know the
inclusivity.
Yes. Yes.
It's just it's in your world, you know.
It's yourself. The intimacy with you know the vibration of color, whether we want to say retina, optical nerve, then you know, a.
So the
you know there's not like there's no red or purple or you know discussion or trying to extract let's say more joy from the intermediary of naming. It's just joy.
The observed is a part of the observer, so there's they're not separate.
Okay.
Same as a sandwich.
Same as a sandwich at the airport. It's like perfect in every way.
Perfect because I mean, if I'm looking at this, then that's a part of my.
Well,
I don't want to use the word experience. It's a part of what it's a part of what is. It is. And as soon as I look this way, then this is a part of what is. I don't know what that means either.
No, well, a part of,
okay.
You know, the implication of whatever is a part of a larger whatever.
So it's included because my attention is there. It's included.
Well, but there's, yes, that, and... There's no attention and there's no included. You see that the
If I were to say that that's true, right now I think I'd be lying, but I also
okay.
think that I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
So
okay.
it would appear that how I would define my experience
well,
changes.
Well, what You as anyone certainly welcome to define their
yeah, well,
experience.
That's right.
But you can only find the reflex of particularization in order to fulfill the urgency or the interest in defining your experience.
But if you're looking, if this is what you see,
not if.
Okay, this is what you see, therefore this is what is.
All right.
And yet.
Well, no, there was no end yet.
Okay.
There really was, there's never an end yet. The to create and yet is, well, it's a lie. Because no matter where one's, let's say, attention turns, right, you call it the portal of the sense windows, might turn
mm-hmm.
in time-space to take in new information.
So then just don't say and yet.
There's never and. There's never and yet.
There's this.
Ongoingly, with no boundary. And with that, and arguably, just for fun, no transition. mm-hmm. Even the transition, just for fun, you know, could be mirage-like. if it's radical inclusivity, mm-hmm. whatever that might suggest, yeah, there's no transition.
So if something you do in the city, which I'm not disputing,
okay,
radical inclusivity,
right?
But it seems as though I have to hold that as let's call it a truth.
You don't. I mean,
because I'm not seeing. But if that's not. I can only claim what I'm seeing.
Yeah, he's got it. Yeah, you can see it from there.
That's exactly it, actually.
Well, it's the playful.
That is.
It's the playful nature of, let's say, making claims. Right? Here we are. Here we, I, you, am, are, this, what the fuck, are, is, duh. And claims?
Well, see, I think Ryan kind of hit it because I was claiming,
yeah.
I was claiming that these were the eyes,
yeah,
that were observing, and I made yeah. a boo boo, I think.
Yeah, maybe a small little boo boo. Well, that's why we keep Band-Aids in the cupboard, pink ones.
I always flower. Go there. Hey. You know, I always do.
That's what claiming does.
Doing the same thing over and over.
Yeah, that's what claiming does. So what we call, you know, ego or mind or, you know, self is the appearance, spontaneous appearance, and the movement, apparent durable or durational movement of claiming, which is occurring, could we say, concomitantly with the non-dual speechlessness. If the claiming is going on, it's not at the expense of, oh my God. And, oh my God, is not at the expense of claiming. They're not mutually exclusive. You know, some kind of religious system that says, you know, bash the ego and do something about attraction and aversion and do something about. It's like, no. Just leave it the fuck alone. Let it be its nature. Rather than presuming that I, because I'm a certain way, this way or that way, or not this way or not that way, I suffer by my own hand. No, just leave it alone. No, one need not make a claim. You see, the energy to, let's say, claim or contrast, make, suggest a thing is true or more or less true than another so-called thing, which we do very well, don't need to stop doing it, you know, is the arousal of, right, particularization, of the arousal of assertion and comparison. You know, what we could call discernment, discrimination.
Possibly, yeah. I'm experiencing the, like I was trying to say with the flood thing, and then you pull out this drop, and something changes.
Oh, absolutely.
So then I was, that sort of was the same thing. I was pulling out this,
yeah.
as though this, it became the particular.
Yes.
So,
right. Yeah. And that's I could suggest that it's kind of fun to see this is a subtle transition, of course, right? The subtle transition the, you know, the dynamic interface that call it non-dual radical inclusivity transitions to, right, claiming, yeah, particularization. It's amazing, and there's no delay. There's no delay. There's no prep. There's no choice in it. And it's like, this is too strange that the delight, let's say, of feeding consciousness, feeding on consciousness. You know, I mean, the rug is kind of fun because it's got the patterns and the swirls and all this color and all kind of a, you know, delightful chaos going on. But that same kind of delight can occur in everything, right? You can't find anything in the field of experiencing that's not, right, miraculous, transcendental. Yeah. And it is released, that, at least that, call it, you know, zone of communion, is released from claim. And then a claiming can appear just whoop, with no transition, no effort, no will, no ego, no nothing, no transition. And then express as a form of, right, a gesture of claiming. And the claiming does not interfere with the revelation, and the revelation doesn't interfere with the claiming. And one is no longer partial. Right? One is no longer partial to being in one nuance as contrasted with another nuance. Yeah. For what we call one's, you know, ego self, there's a lot of preference and enjoyment and non-enjoyment and wishing I were feeling different, in a better place. Someone had apologized to me. I had the courage to apologize to them. You know, just the frenzy of, you know, the irritability of personification. Yeah, there's just a frenzy of it. And that's just not at odds with fucking angels singing. When we're under the influence of the tumult of personification, preference looms large, but feeding off color. Yeah, the preference. There's no preference. Yeah, and fuck it. I mean, really, if you're the apparitional nature of your life is showing up in the way that it is showing up in the so-called present milieu, including the suffering or not suffering that you're enjoying or having, or how you're gracefully or non-gracefully moving through, you know, the karmic waves that appear as the circumstances that frame your life. You know, if it hurts a lot, go see Adam Jaxfield. You know, if it's painful and one's really restless for good reason, go see Jeannie Zandi. Why not? You know, find a partner in misery that, you know, might make it appear as if realization is some place you can end up. You're not going to end up anywhere. Fuck those clowns.
See, this is why I asked you about the Zen Center in Philly. I wanted that Guru Jeff gossip.
Oh, about that down there? Yeah, I don't know nothing about there. We can all go on a Monday night to the Yardley Buddhist meditation circle and hang out. Because after they meditate, they have like cookies, tea and stuff, which rocks. And then they have like a discussion circle or something.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I got thrown out of there, man. You're out. You out.
Start?
7, I think. starts at 7 on a Monday night. I haven't been there in a while. It's nice to go. The space in that, that's a Friends meeting house. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Yardley Quaker Friends. And it's real nice. The main room that they meditate in has, benches and pews and kind of a front thing, like a churchish or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they put cushions up front and you get a chance and someone rings the bell and they say stupid shit that I've never liked. You are what you eat, or something like, you are what you think. Like, you're not fucking anything, and it doesn't fucking matter what you think. Shut the fuck up. That's what I'm thinking when I'm sitting there looking like a cherubic meditator. Yeah, like, they're going, you are what you think. And I'm like, no, that's fucking stupid. You know, and you should honor your father and your mother. Fuck you. They should die and leave me their money. And, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And you're like, no, fuck that. That's stupid. Yeah, and I'm like, you know, I can't say anything, so I just have to pretend as if, yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah, honor, all right, yeah, 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 you are, yeah, that's true. I'm like, nah, fuck you, none of that's true. And then so finally I get lit up when it's time for Vig Newton's, then blessed chamomile. What the fuck are you people saying? They ganged up on me, those two fuckers. They really did. They ganged up on me, those two fuckers, and took me in a private room to kind of like, you know, but they wanted to isolate me because, you know, there was like their Sangha was unhappy with my presence. You're trying to hijack the Sangha. I really don't want your Sangha, dude. I'm just trying to see like what you're made of. How Buddhist are you? Well, we're fake Buddhists. Oh, I knew that.
I think they'd be like real as shit in terms of Buddhists. I mean, that's as Buddhist as it gets, right?
Yeah, I am. I am. Phew. Well, that's what is the mind made of? Well, complaint and defense. That's what it knows. Complaint and defense. So you spend a little time in this kind of whatever approach this is, and you nudge the mind along, and you say, hey, look, you see, look what you're made of. Complaint and defense. Complaint and defense. Bright ideas, complaint, defense, and bright ideas. And then you're like, you know, that guy, I don't like that guy, but he might be right. I never find anything in myself which is not complaint, defense, or a bright idea. Fuck! Then you're kind of toast. Then you're like, oh, shit. You confront it, you know? Just how self-satisfyingly narrow one's personification is. Complaint, defense, bright ideas. And you're like, oh, man. Then existential threat is looming. And you either deal with it or you run away. And even if you try to run away, if it has pierced your veil, even for a nano moment, you can't run. You can't. If that virus has pierced your veil, even for just a short moment, and you've seen that, fuck, I can't stand being a product of complaint, defensiveness, and bright ideas. Whew, now you're a seeker. You just got inoculated. It won't be long now. But most seekers fail. Pride is a strong force. Pride, bright ideas, it's a very, very strong force. So you could say it takes someone in an unusual karmic circumstance, like a card-carrying aversive, to, like, get past that shit, which is just one of my bright ideas. Mm-hmm. What time is it? Oh, it's late. We can go.
Yeah.
If you've been watching, sorry. See you around.